The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jory Slodke for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Discover. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the January-February 2025 issue. We begin with our feature story, The New Moon's Race. Rocks from the Far Side, a planned nuclear reactor near the lunar South Pole, a new search for habitability on Europa, and a few false starts mark the year in moons. In early June, after circling the moon for nearly 3 weeks of scanning the surface for the perfect landing spot, a small probe separated from its spacecraft and began its descent. At about 100 feet above the surface, its laser 3D scanner identified obstacles to avoid. It landed gently on the side of the moon that faces away from the Earth, which is craggier than the side that we see in the southern part of the Apollo crater, a wide and flat region. The Chang'e mission was sent to the moon by the Chinese National Space Administration and takes its name from a goddess in Chinese mythology who drank the elixir of immortality and flew to the moon to live eternally in the moon palace. The moon goddess, Chang'e, is celebrated in a festival every autumn, as well as in China's increasingly ambitious series of lunar missions, now numbering 6. Using a scoop and drill, the lander collected more than 4 pounds of moon rocks, going as deep as 2 meters, about 6.5 feet, and dispatched a small rover to capture a self-portrait. Then it loaded the payload on the ascent vehicle, which returned to the orbiter and brought the samples safely to Earth June 25th. Its haul was historic. It marked the first collection of lunar material from that region of the moon, and a clear reminder that a new moon race is well underway and moving fast. This race has plenty of contestants. Through the ongoing Artemis mission, the U.S. is heading back to the moon. Future goals of the program include establishing a lunar base and an orbiting space station. India, which successfully landed a ship on the moon's south pole in August 2023, has announced plans to send people to the moon by 2040. Both the Russian and Chinese governments have announced plans to get people walking on the moon in the next decade. In addition, the two countries have reported plans to jointly start construction on a lunar base. In March, the nations announced that base would be powered by an automated nuclear reactor on the moon, built by 2035. At least one competitor dropped out. On June 1st, while Chang'e 6 was scooping up moon dust, Japanese billionaire Yusaku Maezawa canceled Dear Moon, his planned private flight to the moon. He blamed delays in the production of the SpaceX Starship mega rocket, which was supposed to carry him and his hand-selected crew into space. Moons have a tendency to get overshadowed by their planetary partners. Jupiter, for example, has so many orbiting bodies, 95 and counting, that the International Astronomical Union no longer gives them names unless they're remarkable in some way. But 2024 brought moons to the forefront, and not just when the moon darkened the sun during April's total solar eclipse. The year in moons got off to a bumpy start when Peregrine, the first lander built by a private U.S. company, Astrobotic, developed a fuel leak on January 8th after separating from the rocket that lifted it into space. Peregrine carried scientific instruments, 6 small rovers, and some remains or DNA from 70 people, including science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke. After stabilizing the spacecraft, Astrobotic researchers redirected the short-lived lander to return to Earth, where it burned up in the atmosphere. Things turned around on January 19th, when Japan became the fifth country to reach the moon. Its SLIM lander, short for Smart Lander for Investigating Moon, touched down near the Scioli crater. The Japanese space agency, JAXA, nicknamed SLIM the Moon Sniper for its precise landing technology, which put it only about 155 feet from its landing target. It began beaming back photos almost immediately, including interesting rocks, labeled with the names of dog breeds. But because it had landed on its nose, SLIM's solar panels were mispositioned, likely shortening its workable life. On February 22nd, a six-legged lander named Odysseus, built by Intuitive Machines, became the first private spacecraft to land on the moon. Odie represented the first visit to the lunar surface by a U.S. spacecraft in over five decades. However, the mission suffered a lopsided landing and tumbled, cutting its life short by a few days. Scientists have also been looking far beyond Earth's moon. In March, the European Space Agency, which launched a mission to explore Jupiter's moons in April 2023, announced it is eyeing Saturn's moon Enceladus for a future mission. In April 2024, NASA confirmed plans for the Dragonfly mission, intended to visit Saturn's larger moon, Titan, in 2034. Dragonfly is unlike any mission that's gone to a distant world before. It will launch a drone-like robocopter that will skitter site to site for 2 years, exploring the coasts and sprawling carbon dunes revealed when the Huygens probe landed in a dry riverbed on the moon's surface in 2005. Titan has 1/7 the gravity of Earth and an atmosphere four times as dense, which makes it perfect for flying a copter. It would be easy physically for a person to put wings on and soar over the surface, says planetary scientist Elizabeth Turtle at the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland. Turtle leads the Dragonfly mission. Titan is a wild world where hydrocarbon rivers may flow through steep headlands into deep seas of methane or ethane. The entire moon is like a giant organic chemistry laboratory, carrying out experiments that would be difficult to replicate on Earth, says Turtle, who keeps a large glass globe of Titan in her office. Dragonfly's goals include studying this alien chemistry and looking for signs of habitability. A freshwater ocean beneath its icy crust could provide the right conditions for life. The search for life on distant moons got a boost in October when NASA launched the Europa Clipper, an enormous spacecraft whose solar panels, fully extended, could span a basketball court. The Clipper is the largest ship ever designed for a planetary mission. After a 5.5-year journey that will include gravitational assists from Mars and Earth, it will boomerang 50 times around Jupiter's fourth-largest moon over the course of 4 years, swooping as close as 16 miles above the surface. Europa, which, like Titan, likely hides a sea beneath an icy shell, is another tempting target in the search for extraterrestrial life in the solar system. In addition to that subsurface ocean, pockets of warm, salty water may punctuate the ice shell, warmed by tidal heating from being squeezed and stretched by its behemoth host, Jupiter. Europa offers researchers a chance to probe alien planetary dynamics. It's a place that helps unlock the secrets of how worlds work, says Bob Papalardo, the mission's project scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. Clipper's instruments will probe erupting plumes of brine and the rugged ridges that crisscross the surface. Scientists want to determine the thickness of the moon's radiation-pummeled crust and what's hiding in the subsurface ocean to discern whether it could sustain life. Clipper's eyes likely won't confirm the presence of alien life, though. Finally, 2024 brought news of the future of moon exploration. JAXA, the Japanese space agency, announced plans to launch its Martian Moons Explorer in 2026, with a goal of studying Mars's two moons and returning samples from Phobos. China plans to send Chang'e-7 to study water and other resources on the moon in 2026. Work continued by Chang'e-8 in 2028. And NASA announced that the planned launch for Artemis II, a crewed mission around the moon, was pushed from November 2024 to September 2025, with Artemis III, a planned mission in which people will walk on the moon, launching in 2026. "We're really lucky in that we have this diverse array of worlds in our solar system," says Turtle. "Each of them provides a different perspective on different processes, not just habitability, but also what kind of geologic processes are at work." That sinking feeling. Two 2024 studies foreshadow an unnerving future for vulnerable coastal cities in China and the U.S. that continue to sink progressively deeper into the ground. Billions of people live along the planet's shorelines. These areas are already under great threat from rising sea levels caused by global climate change. But that might not be the only way humans are impacting cities along our shores. Recent studies looking at the U.S. and China show that the nation's coasts are sinking at an alarming rate, potentially putting hundreds of millions of people and some of the world's largest cities in peril. Subsidence, or sinking land, is nothing new. The main reasons for human-caused subsidence include the weight of buildings, removal of groundwater for public and industrial use, extraction of oil and gas from underground, and compaction of fill to make new land along a coast. Groundwater removal is especially impactful. Areas with large populations need lots of water, so sucking it out of the ground occurs at a rate faster than it can be replenished. This means all the water that was exerting pressure on the rocks and dirt underground, which were, in essence, holding up the land, is gone. The removal of water results in land sinking, sometimes as fast as inches per year. The two largest economies on Earth may be the first to pay the price of land subsidence. Two studies published in 2024 used satellite radar data to make detailed maps showing where and how quickly the land surface is sinking along the coasts of China and the U.S. over the past few decades. In both cases, the news is not good. An April 2024 study by Zuri Ao of South China Normal University and colleagues in the journal Science examined how much cities in China sank from 2015 to 2022. The researchers found that almost half of the urban land in and around 82 major cities studied sank at a rate of 0.1 inches per year. Beyond that, almost 20% sank at a rate of around 0.4 inches per year, and a full 5% sank at roughly 0.8 inches per year. This means that over the next century, some parts of China will likely sink almost 7 feet relative to their current height. This would put one quarter of the land in China's coastal cities below sea level by 2120, thanks to the combination of dropping land surface and rising oceans due to global climate change. Cities like Beijing and Tianjin are sinking the fastest. In total, 270 million people, equivalent to nearly 80% of the population of the U.S., are living on land that is sinking at rates of at least 0.1 inches per year. What's more, the 1-2 punch of subsidence and sea level rise is putting more people in danger from coastal flooding. On the other side of the planet, Virginia Tech geoscience researcher Leonard Onan and colleagues published a study in PNAS Nexus in January 2024 examining North America's eastern seaboard. Using satellite radar data, Onan and his colleagues found that cities like Baltimore, New York, and Norfolk on the Atlantic coast are sinking at rates of 0.04 to 0.08 inches per year. That might not seem like a lot of sinking, but the changing ground level can cause aging infrastructure like roadways, levees, and bridges to degrade even faster. Take the volatile mix of subsidence, sea level rise, and major storms like Hurricane Sandy, and you have the recipe for damage and disasters. Onan and his colleagues say these data should be a wake-up call to create proactive plans to tackle the causes of sinking land and respond to the dangers of rising sea level that could potentially impact up to 16 million people along the eastern seaboard. These findings are not surprising to those who study coastal hazards. Land subsidence is an underappreciated process that compounds the risk to coastal communities from sea level rise and associated coastal flooding, says Anjali Fernandez, an earth scientist at Denison University in Ohio, who was not involved in either study. Repeat surveys like these and others, as well as a range of complementary measurement tools, are urgently needed to measure ongoing elevation change on coastal landscapes. These efforts could involve advanced tech like satellite measurements or more low-tech methods such as ground-based land surveys. Either way, scientists say that more data are needed before mitigation strategies can be implemented. Effective strategies for adjusting to sea level rise can only be built with estimates of these rates, Fernandez says, along with a framework for understanding the processes driving subsidence. The best solution may be water conservation. Keeping water in the subsurface will slow the process of subsidence. Better management of water can help with water supplies for large urban and agricultural areas, but also prevent more sinking. Without such proactive moves, the rising seas and sinking lands will lead to bigger and costlier disasters in global cities worldwide. Gene-edited pig kidneys transplanted into living human patients. A pair of groundbreaking surgeries offers new hope for ending a deadly shortage. The quest to make cross-species organ transplantation, or xenotransplantation, a practical reality took a major step forward in March when surgeons at Massachusetts General Hospital transplanted a kidney from a genetically engineered pig into a patient with end-stage renal disease, the first time an animal kidney had been successfully transplanted into a living human. Although the recipient, 62-year-old Richard Slayman, died of a cardiac event 7 weeks later, tests showed that the kidney was still functioning perfectly. The donor animal was provided by the biotech company eGenesis, which removed 3 pig genes and inserted 7 human genes to prevent rejection. Even with these edits, Slayman's immune system began to attack the kidney after a few days, a common occurrence with human-to-human transplants as well. Doctors were able to control that response using conventional immunosuppressant drugs. The xenotransplant does not appear to have been the cause of this demise, says Winifred Williams, Associate Chief of Mass General's Renal Division and the patient's longtime nephrologist. Slayman had suffered from diabetes and hypertension for decades. After his kidneys failed, he spent 7 years on dialysis before receiving a transplant from a human donor. But that organ gave out and he went back on the machine. By then, his blood vessels had been damaged by fluid buildup, making it difficult to administer dialysis. Repeated surgeries brought little improvement. Without another transplant, he was unlikely to live much longer. He was becoming increasingly depressed and despondent, Williams recalls. He said, "Doc, I can't go on like this. I don't want to go on like this." Slayman faced a dilemma shared by millions of people around the world. In the U.S. alone, nearly 100,000 patients are on a waiting list for a kidney transplant. Yet fewer than 30,000 such surgeries are performed each year due to a perpetual dearth of donor kidneys. Organs from genetically modified animals could eliminate the shortage if the challenges of using them can be overcome. The first 2 pig-to-human heart transplants in 2021 and 2022 both failed within 2 months for reasons still under investigation. But when Williams asked Slayman if he'd consider receiving a pig kidney under the Food and Drug Administration's Expanded Access Program, commonly known as Compassionate Use, he jumped at the chance. "I saw it not only as a way to help me," he said in a statement, but a way to provide hope for thousands of people who need a transplant to survive. Sadly, Slayman's death denied him the opportunity to see that goal fulfilled. His xenotransplant success, however, had just the effect he intended. The pioneering procedure was followed in April by the second pig kidney transplant in a living human. Linda Pisano, 54, who also became the first person to receive a heart pump along with a kidney transplant of any kind. The heart pump failed due to cardiovascular complications, and Pisano passed away 5 weeks after its removal. Still, the New Jersey grandmother survived longer than she might have without the transplant, and her kidney worked well until drops in blood pressure damaged it. Such experiments open a new landscape where the issues of supply of organs could be a thing of the past, says David Klassen, chief medical officer for the United Network for Organ Sharing, which oversees the nation's transplant system. I think we're heading towards a world where this becomes the standard of care. Beyond that, Slayman's bold step holds particular importance for Black Americans like himself, whose risk of kidney disease is triple that of white Americans. One of the intractable problems in transplant medicine is unequal access for ethnic minority patients to transplant organs, says Williams. If you had an abundant supply of organs, it could go far to achieve health equity for all patients. At Slayman's funeral service, the nephrologist and his team delivered a heartfelt eulogy. We told the congregation that Rick's sacrifice would not be in vain. He was a remarkably steadfast, courageous, and generous man. The master immune system controller in our brains. A newly identified neural center plays a key role in moderating inflammation. Scientists long believed that the immune system regulates its own activity without needing supervision by the brain. Yet in a study published in May in Nature, researchers showed that assumption to be wrong. The discovery, experts say, could someday enable improved treatments for diseases in which an out-of-control immune response plays havoc with human health. The team, led by neuroscientist Charles Zucker and neuroimmunologist Hao Jin, found that a group of neurons in the brainstem acts as a master controller of inflammation. The cluster essentially presses or releases the brakes in response to signals from the vagus nerve, a network of fibers long known to link the body with the brain in governing processes such as digestion, respiration, and heart rate. It's easy to envision the brain getting a signal that your heartbeat is out of whack and sending a signal saying, "Get back in order," says Zucker. But we've always thought of the immune system as this collection of circulating players that interact to set up an appropriate balance. The notion that there could be a big brother in charge came as a huge surprise. Intriguingly, the findings grew out of Zucker's quarter century of research on the neurophysiology of taste. In a landmark 2020 study, he and his colleagues showed that mice bred to lack the sweet receptors still chose sugar water over plain H2O, as signal shuttling between the gut and the brainstem, relayed by the vagus nerve, drove them to keep drinking. This work revealed the role of the brain-gut axis in animals' attraction to sugar. Jin, then a member of Zucker's team at Columbia University, wondered whether a similar circuit might help explain a phenomenon first reported in the 1990s. Stimulating the vagus nerve can tamp down inflammation throughout the body. Could the brain be involved in that response as well? Before starting his own research group at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, Jin began working with his mentor to find the answer. The pair and their colleagues launched a series of experiments using the animal models developed in Zucker's lab. First, they injected mice with an immune stimulant derived from bacteria and checked to see if any brain areas responded. Sure enough, there was increased activity in a region of the brainstem called the caudal nucleus of the solitary tract, the same area that lit up in the sugar water study. Next, the researchers used genetic engineering techniques to determine whether those neurons were sending signals as well as receiving them. Employing a disabled virus as a vector, they inserted new receptors into the cells, which allowed them to be turned on and off using a chemical switch. In one experiment, the team gave mice an immune stimulant while turning off the brainstem neurons. A runaway inflammatory reaction followed, like those associated with dangerous immune responses such as sepsis. All of those mice died as a result. But when the scientists administered the stimulant while switching on the neurons, the animals' immune systems mounted a strong anti-inflammatory response, enabling most of the mice to survive. The team also identified two populations of neurons in the vagus nerve that ferried signals to the brainstem controller. One group responded to pro-inflammatory molecules in the body, while the other responded to anti-inflammatory molecules. These findings, Jin suggests, could have implications for developing more targeted and effective strategies for managing diseases caused by excessive inflammation, ailments ranging from autoimmune disorders to long COVID. Yet they also raise new questions. For example, is there a brain center whose function is to heighten inflammation rather than dampen it? And how do brain cells tell the immune system what to do? To control other physiological functions, motor neurons send signals to an individual organ. Immune cells, however, are scattered throughout the body. How can you control this kind of distributed system, says Yale University immunologist Ruslan Mejitov, is the most exciting puzzle out there. The study touches on a broader conundrum too, how our brains affect our physical health. It provides a potential biological explanation for a number of mysterious phenomena, says Zucker. Psychosomatic disorders, the placebo effect, acupuncture, maybe you're acting on the conduction of specific signals so that you can transform the way the brain monitors and regulates the body's biology. Probing the brainstem vagus nerve connection, he suggests, could help solve such age-old puzzles. Young Americans aren't all that happy. Though the U.S. has long held a reputation for its high quality of life, 2024's World Happiness Report shows that trend may be changing. For the first time in the report's 12-year history, the U.S. didn't crack the top 20 happiest nations, slipping to 23rd place overall, and 62nd happiest for people under 30. Scientists haven't identified a single cause, but some speculate that American youth could be suffering due to pandemic aftermath, climate anxiety, and the rise of social media. We've run out of time for today's episode of Discover. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jory Slotke, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Discover is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call area code 919-832-5138. That number again is area code 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.